in sound from way out.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
Fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
deposed from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sound of what we call jazz. Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
49 years! I'm sorry. 49 years, and they stripped away.
The Supreme Court overturns Roe v. Wade. Protests continue across the country.
This Supreme Court thinks that they can put a law on this land that the majority of this country does not support that will strip away the basic human rights of over half of the people living here.
We'll look at the court's decision and what it could mean with lawyer Kitty Colbert, who argued the landmark case of Planned Parenthood versus Casey before the U.S. Supreme Court in 1992, the case that upheld Roe. She's co-author of Controlling Women, What We Must Do Now to Save Reproductive Freedom. We'll also speak with California law professor Michelle Goodwin, author of Policing the Womb, Invisible Women, and the Criminalization of Motherhood.
When we look at rates of maternal morbidity and mortality in the United States, then this opinion is absolutely shocking as and horrific as we see the state-level anti-abortion laws. A woman is 14 times more likely to die in the United States by carrying a pregnancy to term than by terminating it. And so if we fail to include that in our conversation, then we're missing what essentially is a death sentence for many women across the United States.
Professor Goodwin's new piece for the New York Times, no justice, Alito. Reproductive justice is in the Constitution. Then Missouri becomes the first state to enact a trigger law. We'll speak with Yamelcy Rodriguez, president and CEO of Planned Parenthood in Missouri, about the organization's stealth opening of a clinic across the border in Illinois, which has the capacity to serve up to 15,000 abortion-seeking patients a year. And we'll go to Rhode Island to speak with a state Senate Democratic candidate, Jennifer Rourke, who was punched by her Republican rival, who is a cop, during an abortion rights rally on Friday. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Protests are continuing across the United States after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, the landmark ruling that established the constitutional right to abortion. The conservative court ruled 6-3 on Friday in the case of Dobbs versus Jackson's Women's Health Organization to uphold a Republican-backed Mississippi law that bans abortion after 15 weeks weeks of pregnancy while voting 5-4 to overturn Roe. The conservative Chief Justice John Roberts supported upholding the Mississippi law but not overturning Roe. 9 states have already banned abortion since Friday. 17 more states are expected to do so soon. In his majority opinion, Justice Samuel Alito wrote, quote, "It is time to heed the Constitution and return the issue of abortion to the people's elected representatives." In their dissent, the court's 3 liberal justices wrote, "With sorrow for this court, but more for the many millions of American women who've today lost a fundamental constitutional protection, we dissent," unquote. Conservative Justice Clarence Thomas sided with the majority, but argued in a concurring opinion that other key landmark rulings establishing gay rights and the right to contraception should also be overturned. At a protest Friday outside the Supreme Court, California Congresswoman Maxine Waters denounced the ruling.
"You see this turnout here? You ain't seen nothing yet. Women are going to control their bodies no matter how they try and stop us. The hell with the Supreme Court. We will defy them. Women will be in control of their bodies. And if they think black women are intimidated or afraid, they got another thought coming. Black women will be out in droves. We will be out by the thousands. We will be out by the millions. We're going to make sure we fight for the right to control our own bodies."
President Biden also denounced the court's ruling and vowed to protect access to abortion pills and contraception. Friday's rulings also led to growing calls for the Supreme Court to be expanded. Backers of the proposal include Senator Elizabeth Warren, who's also urging Biden to open health clinics to provide abortions on federal land in states that ban abortion. The Supreme Court's ruling comes just 4 months before the 2022 midterm elections. Former President Donald Trump has taken personal credit for the ruling by appointing 3 of the justices who overturned Roe. But Rolling Stone reports Trump is privately concerned the Republican Party's push to ban abortion could backfire at the polls. His former vice president, Mike Pence, is calling for a nationwide abortion ban. On Saturday, Trump appeared at a rally with Republican Congressmember Mary Miller of Illinois, who received cheers after saying Friday's ruling is a, quote, "historic victory for white life."
"President Trump, on behalf of all the MAGA patriots in America, I want to thank you for the historic victory for white life in the Supreme Court yesterday."
Miller's campaign later said she meant to say a victory for right to life, not a victory for white life. We will have more on the Supreme Court's ruling after headlines. President Biden signed a new bipartisan gun safety law, the first approved by Congress in almost 30 years. On Friday, the House passed the bill by a vote of 234 to 193. 14 Republicans joined with the Democratic majority. President Biden spoke Saturday.
"While this bill doesn't do everything I want, it does include actions I've long called for that are going to save lives. It funds crisis intervention, including red flag laws. It keeps guns out of the hands of people who are a danger to themselves and to others. And it finally closes what is known as the boyfriend loophole. So if you assault your boyfriend or girlfriend, you can't buy a gun or own a gun."
While gun control groups praise lawmakers for finding a bipartisan solution, the final law does not include a number of initiatives that were included in a separate bill recently approved by House Democrats, which aimed to ban the sale of large-capacity magazines and raise the minimum age to purchase an assault weapon from 18 to 21. Both shooters in Buffalo and in Uvalde, Texas, were 18 years old. Russian forces have fully taken over the city of Severodonetsk in eastern Ukraine after Ukraine withdrew troops. As much as 90% of the city is destroyed after months of fighting. Severodonetsk is seen as Russia's biggest battlefield victory since the fall of Mariupol in May. Over the weekend, Russian forces fired missiles across Ukraine, including one strike in Kyiv that hit a nine-story apartment building, killing at least one person. In other developments, the New York Times has confirmed CIA personnel and NATO commandos are secretly operating inside Ukraine, sharing U.S. battleground intelligence to help in the fight against Russia. Meanwhile, Russia's announced it will soon send nuclear-capable missiles to Belarus. President Biden and other world leaders are in Germany for a meeting of the G7 to discuss ways to counter both Russia and China. The G7 leaders are working on a plan to ban the import of Russian gold while also looking at ways to limit the price of oil sold by Russia. This comes as Russia defaulted on its foreign debt Sunday for the first time since 1918. At the G7 summit, leaders also announced a plan to raise $600 billion to help finance overseas infrastructure projects in an attempt to counter China's Belt and Road project. A warning to our audience, the following headline includes disturbing video and content. At least 23 people seeking refuge in Europe have died at a border fence between Morocco and the Spanish enclave of Melilla. Many were beaten by Moroccan forces. Others died in a stampede. One NGO put the death toll at least 37. The deaths occurred when as many as 2,000 asylum seekers attempted to cross from Morocco into Spain on Friday morning. Video shows hundreds of people lying on the ground, many motionless near the border fence as Moroccan security forces looked on. The Moroccan Human Rights Association said the bodies of both the injured and the dead were left on the ground for hours, and that Moroccan forces buried people without identifying them or conducting autopsies to determine the cause of death. The mass deaths at the Spanish border come just days before NATO holds a summit in Madrid. Spain's been pushing NATO to focus not just on its eastern border with Russia, but also its southern border. Over the weekend, thousands marched in Madrid to oppose increased military spending by NATO members while calling for the U.S. troops to withdraw from Europe. The United States has released Asadullah Harun Gul, an Afghan man who was jailed at Guantanamo Bay for 15 years without trial. Last year, a federal court ruled his detention was illegal and ordered his release. According to the group Reprieve, Gul suffered severe physical and psychological torture during his stay at Guantanamo, including being beaten, hung by his wrists, and deprived of food and water. Authorities in India have detained the prominent Indian human rights defender Teesta Sethavad, who has been spent years trying to hold Prime Minister Narendra Modi accountable for his role in the 2002 anti-Muslim riots that left more than 1,000 dead in Gujarat, where Modi was chief minister. Her arrest came a day after India's Supreme Court upheld a ruling that cleared Modi of wrongdoing. Amnesty International denounced the arrest of Teesta Sethavad, saying it sends a chilling message to civil society in India. Funerals have been held in Brazil for the British journalist Dom Phillips and the indigenous expert Bruno Pereira, who were recently murdered in a remote area of the Brazilian Amazon while investigating threats to isolated tribes. On Friday, Bruno Pereira was buried after a ceremony where dozens of indigenous men and women paid their respects to the 41-year-old father of three. This is Marco Chicuro, an indigenous leader in Brazil.
So here in Pernambuco, we could not in any way miss this day. We came here to honor our warrior, the warrior Bruno, who today becomes a martyr for all of us, for the indigenous cause, for popular causes, for those who fight in defense of life. How many other leaders were killed? How many of our warriors were murdered because of the struggle for territory and didn't have that visibility? Today, it is important to emphasize that it was not just Dom and Bruno, but many others, other indigenous chiefs, other indigenous leaders who have been murdered.
On Sunday, the family of Dom Phillips held a funeral near Rio de Janeiro. His coffin was draped in the flags of Brazil and the United Kingdom. His sister, Sean Phillips, spoke outside the chapel where the funeral was held.
He was killed because he tried to tell the world what was happening to the rainforest and its inhabitants. His mission clashed with the interests of individuals who are determined to exploit the Amazon rainforest, regardless of the destructive impact of their illegal activities.
LGBTQ plus groups took to the streets over the weekend for pride events that were overshadowed by the Supreme Court's ruling striking down abortion rights under Roe v. Wade. Here in New York, pride protesters warn the Supreme Court appears poised to roll back other hard-fought gains, including the rights to marriage, contraception, and non-heterosexual sexual intimacy.
With a conservative, like, majority in the judicial system, you know, you do say, is gay marriage next? That's very, is it next? Is trans right next? Like, at what point, like, I'm trans, when am I no longer going to be able to exist in this country as a fully, you know, realized person, or am I going to have to hide back in the closet?
Officials in Oslo, Norway, canceled pride events over the weekend after a gunman went on a rampage at a gay bar early Saturday morning. Two people were killed, 10 others seriously injured by gunfire in the assault. Norwegian police arrested a suspect they described as a radicalized Islamist with a history of mental illness. Despite the violence, thousands marched in the streets just hours after the attack, chanting, "We're here, we're queer, we won't disappear." This is Norway's prime minister.
Denne dagen skulle vi feire kjærligheten. Vi skulle
We should have celebrated love. We should have colored the streets in colors of the rainbow. We should have displayed our community and our freedom. Instead, we are filled with grief. Norway is again hit by a brutal attack.
Trump-appointed federal judge in Texas has struck down a Biden administration rule that prioritized the arrest of undocumented immigrants considered to be a threat to public safety and national security. After Friday's ruling by Judge Drew Tipton, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, said it would no longer set priorities for its enforcement actions, leaving some 11 million undocumented immigrants more vulnerable to deportation. The Department of Homeland Security says it will appeal the ruling. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, we spend the hour on the Supreme Court's long-anticipated ruling that overturned Roe, the landmark decision that established the constitutional right to abortion.
You don't own me. Just one of your many toys. You don't own me. Don't say I can't go with other boys. And don't tell me what to do. Don't tell me what to say. And please, when I go out with you, don't put me on display. You don't own me. Don't try to change me in any way. You don't own me. Don't tie me down, 'cause I'd never stay. I don't tell you what to say.
You Don't Own Me by Leslie Gore. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Today we spend the hour on the Supreme Court's long-anticipated ruling Friday that overturned Roe v. Wade, the landmark decision that established the constitutional right to abortion some 50 years ago. The conservative court ruled 6-3 Friday to uphold a Republican-backed Mississippi law that bans abortion after 15 weeks of pregnancy, while voting 5-4 to overturn Roe completely. Conservative Chief Justice John Roberts supported upholding the Mississippi law, but not overturning Roe. 9 states have already banned abortion since Friday. 17 more states are promising to do so soon. In his majority opinion, Justice Samuel Alito wrote, quote, "It's time to heed the Constitution and return the issue of abortion to the people's elected representatives." In their dissent, the court's three liberal justices wrote, quote, "With sorrow for this court, but more for the many millions of American women who've today lost a fundamental constitutional protection, we dissent." Conservative Justice Clarence Thomas sided with the majority, but argued in a concurring opinion that other key landmark rulings establishing gay rights, the right to contraception as well, should also be overturned. Protests broke out nationwide in response to the ruling and continued over the weekend as thousands marched nationwide, with some facing arrest and police brutality in Los Angeles and South Carolina.
Court thinks that they can put a law on this land that the majority of this country does not support, that will strip away the basic human rights of over half of the people living here.
In states with abortion bans already in place, many clinics immediately stopped offering abortions Friday, saying it was the best way to protect staff and patients because of the legal uncertainty, with providers canceling appointments, asking patients to seek help elsewhere. At the same time, reproductive rights activists are mobilizing to support patients with travel funds and more. This is Renee Bracey Sherman, executive director of We Testify, speaking at a protest this weekend.
It's also going to be critical that you show up in 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 months and somebody's arrested for their stillbirth. Or their miscarriage, or self-managing their abortion.
In our next segment, we'll be going to Missouri, which became the first state to enact its trigger law after Friday's ruling. This is Congressmember Cori Bush, a Democrat of Missouri, responding to the Supreme Court's ruling Friday.
49 years. I'm sorry. 49 years, and they stripped away. 36 million people will be affected, and it's oh well. 36 million people, it's oh well. 36 million people, and this is a far-right extremist Supreme Court that's making this decision that affects other people, that affects lives when black women were when we know that black women, the leading cause of death before 1973 was the sepsis that went along with these unsafe abortions. And to say, hey, we're good, we're going back there, we're going to send you back there, to know that people are already hurting, that people need services. This is healthcare. It's like mental health. It's like going to get the services for heart disease, get services for a toothache. It is health care.
In the past, Congressmember Bush has shared that she was raped and got an abortion as a teenager. President Biden denounced Friday's ruling and vowed to protect access to abortion pills and contraception. Meanwhile, Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren and 25 other senators wrote a letter to Biden calling on him to open federal enclaves in red states to health clinics that provide abortion. This is Democratic Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez speaking Sunday on NBC's Meet the Press.
What I believe that the president and the Democratic Party needs to come to terms with is that this is not just a crisis of Roe. Mm-hmm. This is a crisis of our democracy. The Supreme Court has dramatically overreached its authority.
For more, we're joined by two guests. In Philadelphia, Catherine Kitty Colbert is with us, co-founder of the Center for Reproductive Rights. She argued the landmark case of Planned Parenthood versus Casey before the Supreme Court in 1992, which upheld Roe. She's the co-author of the book Controlling Women, What We Must Do Now to Save Reproductive Freedom. Also with us is Michelle Goodwin, Chancellor's Professor at the University of California, Irvine School of Law, host of the Ms. Magazine podcast On the Issues with Michelle Goodwin, and author of Policing the Womb, Invisible Women and the Criminalization of Motherhood. She just has a piece out in the New York Times headlined, No Justice, Alito. Reproductive justice is in the Constitution. We welcome you both back to Democracy Now! Professor Goodwin, let's begin with you. Can you talk about your response to the Supreme Court overturning Roe after almost 50 years?
Well, it's good to be back with you, Amy, on the show. The decision itself, just as we saw with the leaked draft, has many errors, omissions. It has a selective, if not opportunistic, reading of American history. It does not center in all of its claimed originalism and all of its claimed textualism. Interestingly enough, it avoids the 13th Amendment. It even avoids the first sentence of the 14th Amendment. And here's what my New York Times piece was about. It was that when Congress abolished, through the ratification of the 13th Amendment, abolished slavery and involuntary servitude, they were not abolishing that just for black men. They very well understood that involuntary servitude for black women in the United States meant involuntary sexual assaults, rapes, and then the reproduction after that, as black women were forced to labor, not only in the fields, but also labor under the weight, a different kind of shackling of slavery, which was sexual subordination and reproduction. This was very well known. The abolitionist in Congress who led the way for the 13th Amendment spoke and wrote about this. Massachusetts Senator Charles Sumner was nearly beaten to death in the halls of Congress 2 days after giving a speech about the raping of black women. Sojourner Truth spoke to it. I mean, it was clear, the New York Times, there were articles about it. So the very idea that there was no one thinking about involuntary servitude as being consistent with involuntary reproduction is just absurdist. It was written about everywhere. Everyone knew this as being one of the devastating effects of American slavery, and it was abolished with the 13th Amendment. And then later on with the 14th Amendment, it was still recognized that black women were psychologically, physically, and reproductively still being harmed in southern states. Their children were being denied citizenship. Their children were being snatched and taken away from them. And the 14th Amendment was therefore then ratified. The piece goes into depth in all of these categories to give an education to the Supreme Court and to our country to remember this, because otherwise black women have been essentially erased from the Constitution. And by erasing black women from the Constitution, we ultimately erase all women from the Constitution, because the 13th Amendment and 14th Amendment not only freed black women from these bondages, but it also freed white women from these bondages. None of this is given any kind of reading by the originalist and textualist on the Supreme Court, who seem to ignore all of that and have now rendered us to a country where there are free states, where individuals can be free in their bodies, and also those where it is non-free. And one can't help but understand this as being so consistent with the patterns of slavery and Jim Crow in the United States.
And let's talk about the trajectory right through to now. People of color are most affected by the lack of health care that will be available when abortion is outlawed in state after state. Can you talk about the Duke study about black maternal mortality and how much higher it is than for white people who are pregnant?
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because what is also alarming in this opinion and also in the draft opinion is how it gives no regard to facts, concurrent facts. The United States ranks 55th in the world in terms of maternal mortality. It is not in league with Germany, France, its peer nations. Instead, it's in peer company with nations that still publicly lash and stone women. In 2016, the Supreme Court's own record showed that women were 14 times more likely to die by carrying a pregnancy to term than by having an abortion. Once we flash what this looks like in terms of race, then we really get a sense of the horror that's behind all of this. And again, with the Supreme Court deciding that it would pay no attention to it. So in Mississippi, we're looking at 118 times black women more likely to die 118 times by carrying a pregnancy to term than by having an abortion. According to Mississippi's own data from their Department of Health, a black woman, 80% of the cardiac deaths in that state occur to black women. Black women don't make up 80% of the female population in the state, but are 80% of the cardiac deaths during pregnancy. And nationally, they're 3.5 times more likely than white counterparts to die due to maternal mortality. But Amy, that's not all. If you actually look at certain counties within these anti-abortion states, then you see that black women may be 5 or 10 or 15 times more likely to die by being forced to carry a pregnancy to term than by being able to have the medical care of an abortion. And it's just that glaring and alarming. And what's so stunning about it is that the Supreme Court gives no consideration to this data.
Kitty Colbert, you argued Planned Parenthood versus Casey before the Supreme Court 30 years ago in 1992. Roe was reaffirmed in that case. This was about, what, spousal consent, men having to give women their consent for an abortion?
It was that and a number of other restrictions in Pennsylvania law that were upheld. But I think strikingly in 92, we expected the court to do exactly what they did here. And they didn't because Justice Kennedy changed his vote at the last minute. But as a result of Casey, while it preserved legal abortion in most in all states across the country, it meant that many women, particularly black and brown women, women who are poor, women who lived in rural areas, women who were young, had very, very difficult times obtaining abortions because of the restrictions that it permitted. Now, unfortunately, today, as a result of this ruling, those same women will suffer much, much more because their ability to obtain abortion will be totally circumscribed. It's a really devastating opinion, one in which all of us need to be as angry as we can be and to channel that anger to making a difference and changing what the court has done through the legislative process.
And how do you do that? I mean, through the legislative process, now the former vice president, Mike Pence, is calling for Congress, the legislative process, to pass a nationwide abortion ban.
And they could do that. They could do that if they take control of the House of Representatives and the Senate. With a Republican president after 2024, they could easily do that. And Mitch McConnell has said it's on the table. It's something that they will consider, which is just McConnell speak for we're going to do that. Our response has to be to keep control of the House, to win a majority in the Senate that includes two additional senators who are willing to bypass the filibuster rule and pass statutory protection for women. But the reality is that states are also a huge impediment on this issue. As you said earlier, 26 states are expected to ban abortion within the next couple of weeks or months. That means that 40% of women of childbearing age or more will be affected. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of women who will be seeking abortions for their unintended pregnancies, having to travel hundreds and hundreds of miles to safe states. And this is no way to provide health care. This is no way to live in a democracy. And it's because the ultra-conservative justices have taken back the Supreme Court and, frankly, have imposed their own ideological biases against all the rest of us. It's a devastating ruling and one in which our anger is appropriate and certainly should be heated to make sure that we can switch this around.
Now, let's talk about this moving pregnant people from one state to another to have an abortion. The concerns of a number of what abortion funds like one in Texas, corporations who said they'll do this, they'll pay for this. Not clear that their workers would want to make it known to the corporation that they were pregnant. But abortion funds, for example, going inactive now, right at the time where they could get a lot of money, a lot of support all over the country, because they're terrified that it means aiding and abetting. Can you clarify this? Or is the lack of clarity what will is the plan, that people will be afraid to do this, organizations will be afraid to do this, but it's not actually codified in law, the ban on that?
Depend state by state. Because some states, like Texas, prohibit aiding persons to self-manage their care. It's not clear whether it also would prohibit women from traveling and aiding the travel. But the point is, you're absolutely right, Amy, is the vagueness really scares people from taking action. And let's remember there's like three things that are likely to happen. First, it's women who could travel. And frankly, it is women with means who are most likely to travel, women who have the resources to be able to get on a plane or to drive 250 miles. Other women will self-manage their abortion by taking abortion pills. And they will get them in a variety of ways, either through the internet or through prescriptions from foreign countries and, you know, mailing them from India or other pharmacies, or going to Mexico or going to Canada, or frankly, going to their friend who lives in Missouri and asking them, or I mean, not Missouri, but going to California to their friend and asking for the pills there. I mean, there's all kinds of ways to self-manage your care. But the problem, and I think Michelle can talk about this even more graphically than I, is that many of those women will subject themselves to the potential of criminal prosecution, either for self-managing their care and getting the drugs illegally, or the people who are aiding or helping her to get information and to get the appropriate care. I think that we need to stand up and say, this is not all right. Make lots and lots of noise. Make sure that these prosecutors who are adamantly opposed to abortion are taken out of office and defeated at the next election. And all of this will take time and will take effort and will take many, many millions of Americans standing up for our liberties. It's possible. We have to start now.
Let me go to the tweet of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Congresswoman from New York. This is a concise overview about the possible ways to respond. Restrain judicial review, expand the court, clinics on federal lands, expand education access to Plan C, repeal Hyde, hold floor votes codifying Griswold, Obergefell, Lawrence, Loving, etc. Vote on Escobar's bill protecting clinics. We can do it. We can at least try, she said. Let me put this question to Professor Goodwin. One of the points she makes and that Senator Warren has made, along with 25 other elected representatives, is this idea of opening, of providing abortion on federal land called what, federal enclaves, where they're often hospitals on military bases, to pregnant people in red states. Can you explain what this is about?
Sure. It's an interesting point because in her confirmation hearings, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg spoke about a client that she represented. It was Captain Kathy Strzok. This was before Roe v. Wade, and Captain Strzok was in the military and she was pregnant. She actually wanted to carry her pregnancy to term. The military required at the time that if you were in the military and a woman and pregnant, you must have an abortion or leave the military. Captain Strzok wanted to stay pregnant. Ruth Bader Ginsburg thought that this would be a great case to challenge the laws that criminalized abortion, as in states stay off, government stay out of reproductive health care, let women decide on their own. Instead, it was the case that was Roe v. Wade, as we understand it, that the Supreme Court then ruled on 7-2 in 1973. But if you think about what Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg was trying to do at that time and what Captain Kathy Strzok wanted, it was that on military bases, abortions were already accessible, available, and in fact, if you were an employee of the military, you had to have an abortion rather than keeping your pregnancy. And so this idea is actually a longstanding idea because it's already been in practice on military bases even before Roe v. Wade. Women were able to get abortions if they were in the military. And so opening up these federal enclaves for this kind of reproductive health care is meaningful for not just a reaction to Dobbs, but there are medical deserts, reproductive health care deserts all across the country. And there is a dire need for people to get the reproductive health care that they need. So even if we had not seen the result of this Dobbs decision, that would have been a smart thing to do, particularly given the very high rates of maternal mortality and morbidity in the United States that connects to a number of issues, but one of them being that there is not good reproductive health care that's accessible for so many vulnerable people who live in these areas where it is very hard to find a clinic or a hospital to provide basic health care, including reproductive health care.
Finally, Kitty Colbert, Thomas's concurrence, Justice Thomas's concurrence, where he writes that we should move on from here to gay marriage, to contraception. Can you talk about this?
Yeah, I think he's the only one on the court or in the majority that is willing to tell the truth. You know, Justice Alito seems to backpedal and say, well, he doesn't think the only rights that are affected are abortion rights. Well, that's just bunk. I mean, the reality is the rationale that the court used to overturn Roe and Casey is equally applicable to a whole range of what are called unenumerated rights, or rights that aren't specifically listed in the Constitution, but derive from our notions of liberty and equality. And that includes contraception, that includes gay rights, it includes trans rights, it includes end-of-life care, it includes the ability to make decisions about one's child's education. There's a host of liberty. The right to travel isn't mentioned specifically in the Constitution. So there's a host of interests that are at play here. Interestingly enough, Justice Thomas didn't mention the right to marry a person of a different race, maybe because it affects him personally as opposed to all these others that are just, you know, people he doesn't care about. But, you know, the reality is I do think that this ruling is extremely, extremely broad. It is written in a way that can expand. And frankly, state legislators are already attacking us, attacking contraception, attacking trans people, attacking gay marriage in a host of ways. Those attacks will make their way to the Supreme Court. And frankly, I think this court is likely to expand the ruling significantly.
And we just have 30 seconds, Kitty Colbert, but the message that you have devoted your book to, that you are commenting after the overturning of Roe, the subtitle of the book, What We Must Do Now to Save Reproductive Freedom, the Most Important Things People Can Do?
Yeah, three things. One, help women. Two, get active politically. That is, get involved in electoral politics. You may not like it, but we have to do it. And most importantly, make some noise, because, of course, we can't let them continue to take away our rights without saying defiantly that this is not okay.
Catherine Kitty Colbert, thank you so much for being with us. Argued the landmark Planned Parenthood versus Casey before the Supreme Court 30 years ago, which upheld Roe. She also co-founded the Center for Reproductive Rights and is author of Controlling Women. Also want to thank Professor Michelle Goodwin, Chancellor's Professor, University of California School of Law, author of Policing the Womb, Invisible Women, and the Criminalization of Motherhood. We'll link to your piece, No Justice, Alito, Reproductive Justice is in the Constitution. Next up, Missouri became one of the first states to enact a trigger law. We'll speak with Yamelcy Rodriguez, President and CEO of Planned Parenthood in Missouri, about the stealth opening of a Planned Parenthood clinic across the border in Illinois as they close the Missouri clinic. Stay with us.
Thank you. tu hermana, tu hija, Tamara, Pamela o Valentina. Yo puedo ser tu gran amiga, incluso tu compañera de vida. Yo puedo ser tu gran aliada, la que aconseja y la que apaña. Yo puedo ser cualquiera de todas, depende de cómo tú me apodas. Pero no voy a ser la que obedece, porque mi cuerpo me pertenece. Yo decido de mi tiempo, cómo quiero y dónde quiero. Independiente yo nací, independiente decidí. Yo no camino detrás de ti, yo camino de la para ti.
Tú no me vas a humillar, tú no me vas a gritar, tú no me vas a someter, tú no me vas a golpear, tú no me vas a denigrar, tú no me vas a obligar, tú no me vas a silenciar, tú no me vas a callar. No sumisa ni obediente, mujer fuerte, insurgiente, independiente y valiente, romper la cadena de lo indiferente.
Anti-Patriarcha by Anna Tijoux. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. We look now at how reproductive health clinics are responding to the Supreme Court's overturning Roe. That's right, the constitutional right to an abortion. At least 13 states have near or total abortion ban trigger laws that could go into effect within 30 days. Just minutes after the Supreme Court decision came down, Missouri's Attorney General Eric Schmidt announced on social media the state's trigger law is now in effect.
Here in Missouri, the people's voice has already made clear that Missourians respect the sanctity of human life. We believe that without the explicit protection of the right to life, all liberties are under attack, which is why the importance of this day cannot be overstated. I am humbled to be a part of this and the first attorney general in the country to effectively end abortion. As a long champion for the rights of the unborn in Missouri families, I pledge to continue to fight for our most fundamental right, the right to life.
Missouri has for years been one of the most restrictive places to access an abortion, had one remaining clinic in the entire state, Planned Parenthood of the St. Louis region in southwest Missouri, which shut down Friday after the state's abortion ban, the trigger law, went into effect. But abortion rights advocates and providers in Missouri have been preparing for the reversal of Roe. And in 2019, Planned Parenthood secretly built an abortion clinic in Fairview Heights, Illinois, across the Missouri state line, 15 minutes from St. Louis. The clinic will now provide abortion reproductive health care to the growing number of people in Missouri and other states in the Midwest where abortion is planned. For more, we're joined by Yamelcy Rodriguez, president and CEO of Planned Parenthood of the St. Louis region in southwest Missouri, who oversaw the stealth opening of the Illinois clinic. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Yamelcy. First, respond to what happened on Friday, the overturning of Roe, and then immediately the attorney general of your state saying that Missouri would be the first state to enact its trigger law to ban abortion totally.
Having me. And I want to start by saying that today and all the days that led to the overturning of Roe should be such a stain in our history from which we're learning and we must do better. Actually, when the decision came down last Friday, I was with Representative Cori Bush and the U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services, Secretary Javier Becerra, at the last abortion clinic in Missouri, holding a round table to discuss the dire abortion crisis in the state and discussing what abortion providers on the ground needed as we were bracing for impact. So what we have been preparing for a really long time, particularly those of us that work on red states for the end of Roe, the decision was sobering. And it didn't make it hurt any less. But we have been preparing for this moment, and we knew that Attorney General Eric Schmidt was going to put the trigger ban in effect immediately. The decision came in close to 9 a.m., and by 9:22 that morning, abortion was effectively banned in the state of Missouri. And we do what we have always done. We put patients first, and we immediately notified the state of the fact that we were ceasing abortion services that day, and we moved forward to ensure we were doubling down on our capacity and moving the patients that needed access to abortion care from Missouri to the health center that you just talked about, that it's just 13 miles from our health center in St. Louis. It's just across the river in Fairview Heights, Illinois.
Now, Did you completely close the St. Louis clinic, the Missouri clinic? Because abortion is only a tiny part of what is done there. Isn't that right?
Abortion, it's one of the services that Planned Parenthood provided there for, you know, almost 50 years. And we did it proudly and unapologetically. But I want to be clear with Missourians that our doors are still open and that health center will remain open, as you just said, because we provide an entire suite of sexual and reproductive health services that include STI testing and treatment, birth control, transgender care services, and many, many other services as one of the safety net providers in the state of Missouri. And we know that that network is already frail. And we are going to do everything we can to continue to meet the needs of people that need reproductive services in Missouri and work to navigate those patients who are in need for abortion care to our health center across the river in Illinois.
How did you pull off building this really stealth clinic that will serve how many thousands of people?
We started being really strategic after we saw the writing on the wall in 2019. We were fighting to keep our abortion license at the last abortion clinic in the state of Missouri. And it was at that point that we made the very intentional decision that we were going to continue to center patients and we needed to find a solution long term, because we knew that the state of Missouri was hell-bent in eliminating access to abortion without even having to overturn Roe. So we built an 18,000 square foot facility in Fairview Heights. And when we opened that health center, we thought that this was going to be a safe haven and an oasis for reproductive health care for people who needed abortions from Missouri. But immediately after the Texas implementation of the six-week abortion ban, that facility saw an increase of over 121% in the number of patients that were traveling from out of state, having to flee draconian restrictions and laws in their home state to access basic, fundamental, essential care. And now the projections are that in a post-Roe reality that we're living today, that facility, it's expected to see an additional 14,000 patients from the Midwest and the South, and that it's on top of the about 18,000 patients that come to our facility currently for abortion care.
You're calling on the Biden administration to declare a public health emergency. What would that do?
We are absolutely trying to ensure that the patients that are in need of access to abortion have the resources and the tools to do that. And one of the things that we know that the Biden administration can do is declare a public health emergency in order to free up funding for abortion providers to increase capacity. And in addition to that, then have the resources for patients and their support in navigation for, you know, travel, accommodations, childcare, and all of the challenges that everyday life poses for those that are going to be most affected by the overturning of Roe. And we know those are low-income people, people of color, specifically Black and brown communities, and of course, young people.
What about the overturning of the Hyde Amendment? And explain what it is and how it affects people.
Well, the Hyde Amendment, it's one of those racist and discriminatory policies that had been in place, which prevent individuals from using their Medicaid insurance to cover for the cost of abortions. There are states like the state of Illinois that has made a decision to allow and cover the cost via state funding for patients who are and rely on Medicaid to get abortions, and that it's also one of those tools that can be expanded to ensure that people who are in most need and our most marginalized and oppressed, again, because of discriminatory policies, can seek the care that they need.
And finally, Yumelcy Rodriguez, in your Missouri clinic that remains open for other services, if someone asks you, I want to have an abortion, where can I go? Is your clinic, is your staff, your doctors, your nurses allowed to say, well, there's the clinic 10 minutes away, 15 minutes away in Illinois?
We follow all federal, local, and state policies. I just want people to know that we are here for you. We are not going anywhere. And there's many, many tools that you can utilize online in order to find the nearest abortion health center near you, like abortionfinder.org. You can also call our health center in Fairview Heights, Illinois, and we have opened there a regional logistics center. So when you call that number, we're not only going to book you an appointment, but we're going to screen and connect you with all of the practical support resources that you need. We can assist with our partnership with other abortion funds. We can provide financial assistance. We can provide transportation, accommodations, stipends for gas, whatever you need to ensure that any person around the country who is now in a position of having to flee their home state for abortion care can get the care with the dignity and respect that every person deserves, no matter who you are, where you live, or how much money you make.
Yumelcy Rodriguez, I want to thank you for being with us, President and CEO of Planned Parenthood St. Louis Region and Southwest Missouri. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. We end today's show with a segment that some may find triggering in a different way, in lots of ways. We go to Rhode Island with State Senate Democratic candidate Jennifer Roark. She was at an abortion rights rally on Saturday when her Republican opponent, Jean Lugo, as she describes it, punched me multiple times in the face. And there's video. Jean Lugo is a Providence police officer who was off duty at the time. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Jennifer Roark. You're running for the Rhode Island State Senate. He's your opponent, your co-founder of the Rhode Island Political Cooperative. Describe exactly what happened as we roll the video.
I was successfully de-escalating a situation with a counter-protester, and the gentleman had agreed to leave, and then chaos broke out. And when I looked to my left, there was Officer Lugo and his fist, and he punched me multiple times in my face.
He is your opponent for the Rhode Island State Senate, and he's a police officer.
Yes.
He punched you in the face?
He did, multiple times. He is a Republican in this race, so he's no longer in the race, though.
So afterwards, he was, suspended from the police force and then ultimately said he pulled out of the race?
Yes, he was put on paid administrative leave, and then he announced via Twitter that he was no longer going to run for office.
Did you think this would have happened if the video wasn't there?
I'm so thankful for Bill Bartholomew, the reporter that recorded it, but I don't think this would have happened if Bill had not been there.
How are you feeling?
I can't hear in my left ear. I have a constant ringing and then just some tenderness in my face, but I feel better than I did Saturday.
Can you talk about why you were there on Saturday?
As everyone's talking about now, on Friday morning, the SCOTUS decision came out to overturn Roe. And as a reproductive justice activist and organizer, an organization that I am a part of, we had a rally set for 8 p.m. that evening. So I was actually there in attendance as a board member of this organization. And I was speaking on how the overturning of Roe could lead to the reversal of Griswold versus Connecticut, Lawrence, and then especially Loving. And I am in an interracial relationship. So I was speaking how this could overturn the validity of my marriage.
I mean, this is really interesting. We were just talking about this, that Justice Thomas said not joined by the other justices, but it may well be the direction that the court is going, that now they can move on to outlawing contraception as well as gay marriage. He did not mention Loving, where you're referring to the name of the case for interracial marriage. He is, you know, married to Jenny Thomas, who is that's a whole other story because of her involvement with the January 6th insurrection. But talk about what you feel you could accomplish as a state senator of Rhode Island if you are elected.
Yes. So when I get elected, we have the ability in the state to provide abortion access and reproductive care to those who are on Medicaid and to state employees. So currently, if you are a state employee for Rhode Island, you do not have access to the reproductive care as far as abortion care if you need it. Our previous governor had to choose one policy that did not cover abortion access, and they decided to choose nine. So as a state employee, if you do have an ectopic pregnancy, or should you just decide you don't want to start a family at the time, you have to pay out of pocket to cover your abortion procedure when your insurance should cover it. So as the senator, I will work hard to pass the Equality and Abortion Care Act, and that's to provide coverage to people on Medicaid and state employees to have the abortion care that they need.
I want to thank you so much for being with us in the case you're referring to, Loving versus Virginia. Jennifer Rourke, candidate for Rhode Island State Senate. That does it for our show. Happy birthday to John Randolph. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Techno Land? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
This is Law and Disorder.
Today on Law and Disorder, we talk with public intellectual Henry Giroux, who is a professor and author and one of the most important political theorists of our day.
Henry has a profound political analysis of the meaning of the January 6th House hearings. We talk to him about fascism and how to fight it.
In our Lawyers You'll Like series, we have a special place for attorney and professor Holly McGuigan.
Holly is a criminal defense attorney. You'll not just like her, you'll love her. And her storytelling, like every defense lawyer, is beyond belief.
Stay with us.
I'm New York City attorney and author Michael Stephen Smith.
And I'm New York City attorney and activist Heidi Boghossian.
And I am attorney Marjorie Cohn, professor emerita at Thomas Jefferson School of Law and regular columnist for truthout.org.
Law and Disorder Radio was launched 18 years ago by four lawyers for the purpose of defending democracy and the rule of law. This was just after the United States attacked Iraq, under the false pretense that Iraq harbored weapons of mass destruction. We have seen democracy and the rule of law consistently disintegrating. Starting perhaps 40 years ago under the Reagan administration, this disintegration has brought us to the crisis of today. A committee of the House of Representatives is actually holding televised hearings on the attempted coup d'etat by the last president, Donald Trump. At the first hearing, it was demonstrated that Trump planned to ignore the results of an election which he had lost by 7 million votes. The insurrection that he initiated was unsuccessful. The Capitol was attacked after Trump incited the insurrectionists, and Trump did nothing to stop it for over 3 hours. When Vice President Mike Pence refused to go along with Trump's scheme to overthrow the election results, Trump suggested that hanging Pence was a good idea. The insurrectionists had built a gallows on the grounds of the Capitol. What has brought us to this crucial point? We live in a country where inequality is increasing, where, as Bob Dylan wrote, money doesn't talk, it swears. Nearly half the population is poor or near poor. Neoliberalism, an extreme form of capitalism, has taken hold and hollowed out the country. Schools have been privatized, and there is no national health care system. Students are $1.7 trillion in debt, just as a result of attending college. The country's infrastructure